Welcome back to Following Noah Donna Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 209, and we're in chapters 20 through 34 of The Lost Metal. Paul, how are you?
Oh man, how am I? Really good, to answer your question nicely, and really excited to talk with you all about the chapters. This is the part of the week where I come in and ask what's actually happening after I've read for a week and not, raise lots of questions. So excited to be here.
Elliot?
Paul said it, and I'm feeling it. I need your guys' help after these chapters. There is some stuff in here that I think just went way over my... I thought I was starting to know the Cosmere. We're like 15 books into the Cosmere now. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm a hot shot. I know what's going on. I got this Cosmere understood. And then the Lost Metal chapter, 28 hits. And I'm like, what? You've got a jar of what? Okay. All right. It's hidden.
Yeah. Just wait till next episode. Let's roll intro. And then I believe we have a patron from Paul.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right, over to you, Paul.
All right. Yes, Trevor, you are right. We have a surgeon. I'm now very intentional every time to make sure I say the right status. A surgeon, if I'm not wrong. And so huge special shout out to our surgeon this week. Our new very own. And once again, I'm sorry for horrible handwriting, but Anna Rose. Beautiful name, absolutely stellar name. Anna Rose, thank you so much for your support of the podcast. We really appreciate it. And it's been a minute since we've gotten to shout out a patron, so it's really fun. I kind of miss this segment where I get to ramble and Trevor and Elliot have to listen to me talk about the patron and then, all this stuff. So really excited to have Anna Rose on board with us.
Thank you for supporting us. Appreciate it.
I'm taking the microphone right back because I would like to say I've switched my setup because I could not figure out how to get pictures and things behind me. Trevor and Elliot have a very beautiful little podcast setup. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see it looks a bit different. I'm in the same room, but I'm no longer in the corner. I'm kind of facing the room. And so I hope to have a nice, beautiful little display back there in the future. I think I promised that weeks ago. Said, don't worry, guys, I'll have my background all set, and then I didn't follow through, so I'd like to formally apologize as well. So,
you've got your Roshar map. You've got all the essentials.
Yeah,
you've got
Roshar. It's sitting up right now. I do have the Roshar map sitting up. It has not been hung on the wall yet. That'll be next.
All right. Let's get a summary from Elliot, and then I really want to talk about Chapter 20. We kick off with a doozy this week. Go ahead, Elliot.
Okay. I'm going to gloss over a lot because, one, we covered a lot of chapters, and two, if I start talking all the details, it'll just be me talking for the entire episode. So, highlights of what we saw in our chapters here from The Lost Metal, chapters 20 through 34. We left off with Marcy deciding she's going to pull this sting operation where they pretend to be the delivery boys of the set. They dress up like a mall. They take their trucks. They're driving to Bilming to pretend to deliver the stuff and to arrest them all. Well, they get there and they bump into the Bilming police force also trying to make some kind of arrest sting. I think the phrase in the chapter is that our sting just got stung and ends up being a little bit of a catastrophe as police and bad guys are all having a big old standoff with the guns all pointed at different places. And then it does erupt into full on battle as we fight with very powerful members of the set, including some magic users who we think are probably using Hemalurgy to get a bunch of different powers. Wayne is there battling away, a couple other surprise characters we bump into along the way. Wax does show up to save the day. So we left Wax behind initially, and then after his conversation with Harmony, where he says, "All right, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to do this for you, Harmony." Wax shows up, kind of saves the day. Actually, they spent like 4 chapters battling. It's quite the drawn out action sequence. So some pretty cool segments in it for sure. At the end of it all, they end up talking with the police force and the mayor of Bilming, who, not the friendliest bloke, he definitely is trying to stop our heroes from doing their thing, so we can group him in bad guy status, I think, for now. And then, let's see, oh, Death shows up while they're talking to the police, right? They're in the police station, and Marsh just comes sauntering straight through the middle of the police station with everyone staring him down, and yeah, that was quite the jaw drop moment. He makes a statement there for sure. Shares a little bit of info with our team, and then they end up coming up with a few different leads that they're going to chase down to try and find where the set are in Bilming. They end up talking to a journalist from a like newspaper of ill repute, and they get a little bit of information from her. Wax has a conversation with Telson through magic. And I think that kind of gets us through this segment of chapters.
Nice job. All right. Without any further ado, before we even get to the sting, Marisi, on the way to Bilming, picks her truck at random and then finds herself in one-on-one in a truck with Moonlight, who apparently is the masked lady who was in the caverns in episode 1 of this book. Gentlemen, do you know who Moonlight is with what you were given?
Trevor, I think this is, for me, I can't speak for Elliot yet. I don't know. I may be totally off. I'm going to steal what Elliot was saying, though, of what we're 15-ish books deep into the Cosmere. And so I'm like, I should know everything that's going on. And I don't know for sure who Moonlight is. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed it. If so, that's my big question. I want to know. But I don't know right now. So to answer your question, no, I don't.
Elliot?
I'm proud of myself for this one. I've learned there's been world hoppers in the past recently that I've missed or completely didn't know who it was. This one I knew right off the bat for a couple reasons. I had a leg up because not very long ago, I re-listened to the audiobook of The Emperor's Soul. Okay. And between having recently read The Emperor's Soul and picking up on a new tip that I've gotten from, I think you, Trevor, maybe some of our Discord listeners, I've learned you can always tell a world hopper by their swear words.
Yes, indeed.
How do they swear? What Moonlight opens up really fast with knights as her swear word. And having just read The Emperor's Soul, that immediately clicked for me, because in The Emperor's Soul, Shy swears by knights all the time. Like every 5 sentences, she's dropping knights. So right from the get-go, I think this is our soul stamp crafter, Shy.
You are correct. Nice job, Elliot. Shy is on Scadrial as part of the Ghostbloods. What do you guys think?
I think this is awesome. Actually, I really liked Shy. I really liked The Emperor's Soul. So I think this is really cool. I have been pointing to and noting like soul stamp like things or similar things, or theorizing other things might be soul stamps. So I'm all for it. I'm glad she's here. This does have me a little curious as to how she got here. Is this before the events? The events of Emperor's Soul happened before this, right? My understanding is that would be the case.
I assume so. I always put everything on Elantris as like a long time ago like the modern events of the Cosmere, but that could be a misconception. But yes, I assume this is quite later Shy, because when we meet Shy in Emperor's Soul, she's fairly young, right?
Yes. I don't necessarily remember a specific age, but she seems young. She seems like the young prodigy type of character archetype. And I guess major spoilers for the Emperor's Soul coming in. Didn't she end by completely... Elliot just recently read this, but didn't she end by basically completely wiping out her identity and starting from scratch as someone else?
She threatened to do that. She considered that. But I don't think she does that in the Emperor's Soul.
Okay.
She gets away. She gets away scot-free without having to do that.
Okay.
So the Emperor's Soul is really your first introduction to like identity as a magic system and manipulating identity. So that might have happened between Emperor's Soul and now, but the Emperor's Soul really ends with she completes the Emperor's Soul stamp. It works, or at least works mostly, and then makes her escape with like her speed soul stamp. And that's how that book ends, or the novella ends. So yes, I assume this is much later. She's somehow gotten included with the Ghostbloods. Does that mean the Ghostbloods are on Elantris, or does that mean Shy got off Elantris without the Ghostbloods and met them on Scadrial? I don't know. But yes, Shy is on Scadrial with the Ghostbloods, it would seem. There's a couple other clues besides Knights, which is your most obvious one that Elliot caught. They have some like existential conversations about art and how you always have to like cover over something to create art, which is, you know, very soul stampy. Or there's another one that I'm missing. There's another big clue. Oh, she talks about like the fall of empires and emperors is one of her lines, which is like a direct reference to the Emperor's Soul. So, yeah, we have Shy, and I'm very excited that, Elliot, you caught on to that. If neither of you had caught it, I wouldn't have revealed it to you yet, but I was certainly welcome to confirm it if you guys caught on to it.
Here's a dilemma that's starting to form, though, with this. I'm very excited to see Shy. I really enjoyed her character in Emperor's Soul. Emperor's Soul is one of my favorite stories from Brandon so far. Definitely of the shorter ones. But I still can't shake the idea that the Ghostbloods are bad guys.
Yeah.
And we've probably been skewed on this because we read Stormlight first. I wonder if other people who may... I don't know how many people are going all the way to Lost Metal without having read Stormlight, maybe less. But I still can't not think of like Moraes, the Ghostblood. And so now I'm running into a problem. We've got Shy, who I really like. We've got Marisi, who seems to maybe be taking steps down the road of joining the Ghostbloods. Solid, like my favorite character hero of these Mistborn Era 2, potentially joining the Ghostbloods. But like, hang on a second, these are the bad guys. Am I rooting for the Ghostbloods? Am I not rooting for the Ghostbloods? Where am I supposed to be?
I've thought about this a little bit, Elliot. The only time we really get a distinct impression of the Ghostbloods is in the Stormlight story, right? Like, excuse me, our other stories we see members of the Ghostbloods. We maybe see some of their activity, but it's not like this underground organization, the Ghostbloods. Like, I feel like it's not presented the same way. Like I feel like it's made more of a focal point in Stormlight. And I feel like we don't get that elsewhere much. Like, there's people from all over in the Ghostbloods, but in the stories we've read, are there other times that it showcases it more? I feel like we're supposed to have that understanding of the Ghostbloods, that it's at least shady, or we don't know the motives, or it's amoral or something like that. So, because of what we're shown.
Coming off of Stormlight, you are supposed to view Ghostbloods as a negative force for Roshar. That Moraes makes it extremely clear that Thaydekar is not in this for Roshar. He does not care about, you know, Kaladin and Dalinar and Honor, etc., etc. He's in it for Scadrial. And the whole point, the whole reason why the Ghostbloods are on Roshar, which is before this, is they're trying to get Stormlight or Investiture in general off of the planet in like a compact form, like a disk drive. So that's their whole goal, is to get transferable Investiture. So within the context of Stormlight, I believe they are a nefarious force. But by the time Stormlight 5 ends next year, could the Ghostbloods be in a more positive light? Perhaps. But now I'm like trying to envision a shy, Marisy, Shallan like hero trio book in the next era of, I don't know, Mistborn or something. But that'd be wild.
I think you misspoke there. You meant to say Light Song, but yeah, I'm looking for that. For that story as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, we don't have much representation. You know, it's easy to think maybe on Nalthus, right? We don't have representation with the Ghostbloods from what we've seen, but that's just a misconception because Shallan is a member, you know, and she's also in Nalthus, you know. So, you know, it's just something that I see commonly misunderstood, but just have to clarify.
All right. So we have Shy kind of on the sidelines trying to convince Marcy to join the Ghostbloods, I guess. But we can talk about her more next episode. Let's get to the warehouse. That their sting is stung, as Elliot and Wayne say. And they run into the mayor when everything's said and done. Do you guys remember who this mayor is? You've met him before.
Didn't we bump into him last book in the Waterfall City?
Yes.
At the party? And he was
a new Saren. Correct. He's some like low noble guy in the set in New Saren. New Saren goes, the governor of New Saren gets assassinated that night.
Yeah.
And Trone makes his way over to Bilming, which is the new seat for the set. He is at the mayor now, and he's super cocky and probably in league with the set, is what Wax assumes. So they go to his jail, and then Marsh finally shows back up in Mistborn Era 2. We haven't seen him since
the end of book one, right?
The end of book one, right? Like,
yeah,
that's the only time we've seen him.
So oh, we saw Wax. We saw Wayne dress up like him, but we haven't seen the real him.
True.
Wait, yeah. How do we know this wasn't Wayne dressed up, right?
Yeah, this scene was actually pretty hilarious through most of it, because you could just picture the vibes in the room of they're having this discussion, they're having this little like throw my authority round discussion, and then all of a sudden you just hear footsteps footsteps. And everyone like slowly turns, and there through the front door of in plain view of everyone is this tall hooded figure with spikes coming out of his eyes, slowly just like marching through the center of all of these people whose jaws just drop to the floor, like epic scene.
And then he really plays it up too. He like walks up to intro and he's like, "How would you like to die, mortal?" And then like totally freaks him out.
And then when Entron does walk out of the room, he like almost falls over because he's faking the whole thing and is like, "Oh, that was really hard to do because I'm almost dead, apparently."
Yeah. So he tells us in this chapter that he's not going to be much help because he's running out of ATM. And that kind of just made me wonder, like, okay, what? I understand that using Marsh in book four is kind of a cop-out. You don't want to overpower our heroes. But why does Harmonium not work in sustaining Marsh? Do you guys have any ideas? Did they even talk about this, why he can't use Harmonium?
I don't recall them talking about that specifically, but in my mind, it doesn't feel surprising much at all because... somebody gave Wax a lecture. Was it the Chondra guy about Harmonium? Like the fact that Harmonium is a different metal and it has different properties and powers because it truly is the combination of preservation and ruin with all the limitations that come with that. ATM is just straight up preservation. So to... The other one. You sure?
Yes. ATM is AT, that's ruin. Laracium is from preservation. And Laracium is the one that makes you a Mistborn. ATM is the one that makes you see the future.
So ATM is ruins?
Yes.
See, that ruins where I was going to go with that. In my mind, I had ATM associated with preservation. So when he says, "Oh, I need ATM to not die," I was like, "Oh, well, of course. Yeah, preservation." But. No, you're right, aren't you? It's because that's the whole plot line of our first era is they're hoarding the ATM to...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's the only way I can remember that. I typically think of ATM with the preservation side, but yeah, it's like the whole point is that ATM is Ruin's power, almost, or his investiture somewhat kind of incarnate. And so, yeah, that's how I remember it because it was stockpiled at the end of Era 1.
Yep. But both Wax and the Set are trying to split Harmonium last episode and the episode before. So maybe somebody will figure out how to make ATM for Marsh here. Prediction. Does Marsh make it to the end of the book? Or is he dead?
I think he's going to make it. I think he's going to be there for Era 3. I think he's going to be our, like, you know, it was almost thought of maybe Kelsier would be that character that maybe reappears and maybe, I don't know, mentors is like the, you know, the, what, Obi-Wan silhouette in Star Wars kind of thing, you know, like throughout the ages or whatever. But I feel like Marsh is going to kind of be that person. He's kind of the legend, Iron Eyes. I get the sense that he's like Bigfoot. it's just like this legend around Scadrial of, "I saw Iron Eyes. He does exist. You know, he's real, you know, and stuff." That's how I've pictured it.
Yeah.
And I kind of imagine that he's going to remain almost as superstitious, but we know to be real character that will come around. I think he's going to make it.
I don't remember the answer to this, but I also think he's going to make it simply because he's got plot armor of that. He's just too cool. He's he's too cool to kill off. You got to keep him until at least like book one of Era 3.
So he's got cool factor armor.
Right.
Maybe he'll become the next Harmony. That could also be the switch there. That'd be kind of crazy. That would also be the way to save him, probably.
True.
So, it could be.
I actually had a question for you guys while we're talking about Marsh and not dying and all this stuff. I'm trying to find the exact quote because the exact wording might be relevant. But somewhere in this chapter, Marsh is like sharing information, yada, yada, yada. And then he just kind of offhand drops, and oh, yeah, there's only three of us still alive. Clearly referencing back to like the days of old before the whatever the event with the fancy name.
Catasandra.
Thank you. And I immediately, as soon as he said that, he's like, oh, yeah, there's three of us still alive. I immediately started doing inventory like, ooh, okay, that's a clue. Three. Who's our three? Do we know this? Do we not know this? Well, Marsh, there's one. But I immediately hesitated as I tried to go any further because Sazed maybe is another one of those. How does Marsh consider alive? Is ascended to shardhood still alive? Like, probably. But then the next obvious number three would be Kelsier, who's very definitely dead, sort of.
Right.
So, like, is he still alive? So I clued in on that, like, ooh, this is going to give me helpful information, and then very quickly realized maybe not at all. But well, in Marsh's perspective, there's three of the old crew still alive.
There's there's a fourth candidate in there as well.
I was going to say, my only other character question with this is Spook. Where is Spook? Uh-huh. Is he alive? I don't actually know what Spook is, what he's like right now. We've at least seen what our other characters are doing or ascended to or whatever they are. But have we seen officially for Spook?
So, according to Scadrial History, which, you know, obviously could be an unreliable resource, Spook lives for like 100 years after the Catasandra and then lives a pretty normal life as the governor for like 80 years and then dies. So, do with that information what you will. What I'm referring to is Tensoon. Tensoon is still very much alive and still very much kicking. But would Marsh consider him part of the crew?
Right.
I don't think he would. You're right. He's definitely alive. But I don't think Marsh would consider him one of the originals.
Right.
You know?
Because Marsh was part already of the crew. Off,
yeah. Here, he was off doing his Inquisitor thing while Tensoon came onto the scene.
Right.
Let me read the quote really quick and then we can maybe try and move on to other stuff. But he actually is even talking about Kelsier in this segment because they're talking about the survivor. And then Marsh goes, he's close to alive. After a fashion, he's less alive than I am, but perhaps more than other ghosts. It's hard to say. Three of us remain from that original crew after all this time. Only three. Legs to a tripod. Balancing one another. And he, like, I imagine him, like, gazing off in the distance and, like, rambling on into nothing.
It's really funny to hear Elliot's interpretation compared to Michael Kramer's interpretation because the entire time Michael Kramer's reading this scene, it's like this really dark, intense, gravelly voice. He's like, there's three of us, legs to a tripod, blah, blah, blah. And then Elliot, you're like, huh, yes, there's still three of us alive.
Yeah, see, it's got a bit more whimsy.
Yes. Marsh is a softie on the inside. He is. He's all hard meat on the outside. He's a softie.
Yes, I do believe he's referring to himself, Sazed, and Kelsier. And the three of them have different states of alivehood. I mean, all you can't really say that any of the three of them are like completely alive.
Right.
None of the three of them are completely dead either. So
I guess maybe the only thing I take away from that perhaps is confirmation Spook is not alive? Question mark.
I think Spook is dead. I wouldn't hold on to that theory.
That's fair. I really didn't remember what his status was, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I think Trevor's red herring us again. It's been a while since he's done this on us, but I think he
knows. He already remembers that Spook comes back.
He's read some of this book. He's red herring us.
Yeah, he knows that Spook comes back at the end with the Bands of Mourning and becomes autonomy, and he's trying to, you know, he's trying to get us off the scent, but we know exactly.
Goodbye. Oh, he's back.
Somebody just set up a chainsaw outside my window.
Nice.
Okay.
Well, we had some SpaceX rockets launching, I could hear.
Where were we? The warehouse. There's a nice action sequence where Wax shows up and saves the day, and I can just picture this as like some like slow-mo Marvel action sequence where we're just watching everybody in slow-mo, and then Wayne and not Wayne are zipping around the battlefield just smacking each other with sticks. Very odd.
The anti-Wayne is particularly odd. They've apparently specifically crafted an anti-Wayne with hemological powers. How very specific.
This was one of those moments that, more than anything, I wished I could see. Like, I could see a well-done on-screen adaptation of this scene. It sounds very, you know, it is very funny and cool, the like, kind of anti-Wayne, they have the same powers, but it was almost hard for me to picture what these fights were like. Like, this, it's like, he's making a bubble, and sometimes she'll make a bubble and enter into his bubble, and, like, with the speed bubbles and everything. And so it's just like a lot going on.
Double bubble.
Exactly. Double bubble trouble right now. And right. It's just out of hand. but I definitely get this picture of, like, it was one, it was a totally new, I guess, fighting magic thing unlocked in my brain. It was very, I don't know, it was very intense, and I imagine would be very comical to see on a screen, because it's like, if he gets out of the bubble and he makes his own isolated bubble, he's kind of, right, while he's waiting for her to redo her bubble, or whoever's redoing their bubble, he's just kind of sitting there for a while, I imagine. Like, I picture this really funny dichotomy of, like, really fast-paced fight where they're, to someone, an outside person's perspective, they're literally like flying in a blur and all this stuff. And then like moments where he's just kind of like sitting there or something, you know, like that's how I picture it. Which was very interesting, but yeah, I was wondering about this. This is the only like anti-character we see, right? Like, this is very intentional. This is Wayne, but evil.
Right.
Like, Wayne's powers, but evil. Do you think later we're going to see, like, some more, like, carbon copy type characters that, you know, are we going to see an anti-Wax specifically? Or well, something like that?
In this chapter, they have the set coin shot guy, but I don't know if he's, right. Like, I don't know if he's super, like, Wax copy like the other. What the Wayne copy's directly a Wayne copy? I don't know.
Wax's opponent seems like they just went for max power. They're just like, man, Wax is really good and powerful. We just need to go like pour all the serums into the pot and drink this. You know, that's who he's fighting.
That's true. Which I could be wrong, but I feel like this is the first time in Era 2 that we've seen someone with like thug powers, like pewter burning powers. I could be wrong, but that's something that I feel like was really prevalent, to see these pewter arms and thugs in Mistborn Era 1, and hasn't been here, which it is different. This is more Wild West gun shoots and coin shots than hand-to-hand combat. But that was something that kind of surprised me, because it felt very prevalent before, and there probably have been more thugs, but this is the first time I remember it being a major thing that they're really strong, you know?
There have been a couple set, like, lieutenant guys who have been pewter burners, like, on the there's a train robbery scene where the set guy is pewter and like bends a shotgun in half and stuff. Like, so it's kind of been in the shadows. There hasn't really been a main character with pewter, that's for sure. So we get past the warehouse, we get past the mayor, and they go to an apartment of some conspiracy theorist guy. And he was a chemist for a tire company, but then he like tried to blow the whistle on him that it wasn't really a tire company. It was a front for moving goods in and out of the city. The set come for him. They seem to have come and killed him and then covered it up is what they settle on. But then he left a clue of who he was leaking information to. They go to one of the most disreputable newspapers in the city. And the poor editor lady is locked in her attic, afraid to show her face because, rightfully so, the set killed her informant guy. And right before they get to her, and right as they get to her, she drops, or there's two drops of, or there's two nods that Rosharans are on Scadrial. Did you catch either one, guys?
I picked up a fair amount from Moonlight's discussion. She makes several Rosharan roughly references. I think she talks about Odium directly at one point.
Yeah, she does. That was back in chapter 20.
Yeah, that's a little ways back. But I don't think I did note down anything in these chapters.
So right before they get to, I don't remember her name, the newspaper lady, Wayne runs off to get some street food and comes back, and it's like this greasy burrito that has a bunch of like meat gravy in it. And Wax says, I've never seen that before. What is that? And Wayne says, I don't know. The guy called it chowta. And then they keep, and then they move on. And you're like, okay, hold up. Hold on. That is straight from the Horn Eater Peaks, chowda, like, or sorry, the Herdazian, because Lopin's the chowda guy, right? So apparently, somebody who's either been to Herdaz or is Herdazian is in Bilming selling street food.
So I do remember this now, and all I could think about while reading this was like, okay, this is such a straight ripoff of, you know, chowder, you know, like I didn't remember it was a Herdazian thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It is, but I didn't remember that. I'm like, how are we talking about like chowder, a normal, like, I don't know. It just really threw me for a loop there. Of like, is Brandon trying to, I kept telling myself, no, it's confirmed Earth is not in the Cosmere. But anyways, threw me off. But whenever he kept saying it like he was.
And then the second clue comes from the newspaper lady herself. And she refers to the blonde haired folks that have settled on the west side of the city. She's convinced they're fairies. Does that ring any bells for you guys?
The fairies is what throws me off pretty big time. My guess is that is more Elantris stuff. Just because they're more glowy, I guess.
Lanterns do glow, that is true.
And I think her protagonists, weren't they blonde? I don't actually remember for sure, but I don't.
Serenity is.
Yeah, I know Serenity's blonde at least.
Come on. Who's the blonde haired people? You can do it.
Is this so the. Is. Go ahead, Elliot.
If you got it, go ahead.
Well, I'm just throwing things out there. Are these the Thalens? Is that the who's blonde? They're the people with the eyebrows, aren't they?
Thalens have the eyebrow thing going on, but I think I'm thinking of the very opposite side of Roshar, The northwest part of Roshar is known for like this like golden hair, like shiny, looks like tinsel golden hair. Cause it all comes, it, I think part of that feeds into like Adolin's bloodline. I think his mother Evie is from that,
there you go,
that place. And so like, that's why Adolin has that like half blonde, half black. But just because some immigrants to the city have blonde hair does not immediately make me jump to, oh, Rosharans.
Oh, come on. You get one line and you don't immediately make 10 assumptions?
Oh, don't get me wrong. I do that all day. But the this one in particular?
It is a bit of a shallow like description, I guess. But who is this group and why are they here? That's my question of like, okay, these are the blonde folks from Roshar. What do we know about it? We know that, I guess, Evie was from there.
The Irialli is...
The Irialli.
We probably...
are the blonde-haired people from West Roshar.
We might have to revisit this at a later date. This is a weird thing to be saying. I don't think I can talk about this for spoiler reasons.
I think you're right.
Check it.
There you go.
Is this a certain scene we read that's in the future?
If you know, you know.
Okay, I'm with you.
Oh.
Paul got it.
I think I'm also with you now. I'm
also. The fairy people that just showed up in the city one day? Come on. Come on.
Wow. Okay, so that was a bigger reveal than Elliot and I thought.
I didn't think about that at all. I still think it's a stretch. But
the pieces connect more now. Well, let's just say, given only current information, I think it is a stretch as well.
And I, for everyone out there who's extremely confused right now, We have read some unpublished content.
If you avoided our episode with Christian from Lost in Roshar, that's what we're talking about. That there's an unreleased chapter that we are not that we're talking circles around right now. But anyway, what else we have? All right, so the newspaper lady, she leads them to her like info room in her basement where she's etched everything in metal because Ruin might find it, you know, like she's like super superstitious. I think it's really funny. And then her informant guy said, like, one of his ramblings was, they're going to split harmonium and make bombs that's going to turn us all into turtles. And Mercy's like, okay, I was with you till the end there. Hold on. I just really think it's funny that Brandon Sanderson's playing off like the super crazy superstition like guy in the newspaper that's just rambling, but he's 90% right this time.
Oh, and they start talking about rockets. I got very excited. Rockets are my thing.
Self-propelled and weapons.
Yeah, they start describing like, oh, they're how are they going to deliver this bomb? Oh, we could put it on a self-propelled artillery shell. And I like pause for the briefest of seconds before I'm like, wait, that's a rocket. A self-propelled, rockets.
There you go.
And even more, they supposedly are kind of talking around the fact that maybe the whole reason why the Set haven't detonated their bomb yet is they're having issues with their rocket fuel. They're like, maybe they haven't figured out the fuel yet or something to that effect. And I can confirm rocket fuel can be very tricky sometimes.
Just put unleaded in it. It's fine.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, just go down to your local, you know, Phillips or Shell or something.
There you go.
Can't be that hard. They've got cars. Just put some gas in there.
Speaking of bombs, there's a question I had to ask you guys. They find this picture, or they think it's like an actual picture of a bombed city.
Yeah.
And they get very hung up on this. Like I kind of dismissed it quickly as like, oh, it's just part of their plans. But they like, our heroes kind of stay stuck on this for a while. They're like, how do they have a picture of a bombed city? like, is that what this actually is? Is it actually like they went and found some remote city that our heroes would not have even heard about, completely bomb it as a test, and then take a picture of it? Or is it like just a really nice sketch, like a really well done sketch of, hey, this is what it's going to look like. This is part of the plan. I was confused why they were so stuck on that.
A little bit of concept art for your bomb.
a little gruesome, I guess, but that's kind of where I chalked it up as in there, but they're all like, how do they have this picture?
I don't know the answer for you.
Time travel?
It's hard for me to believe that it could be like it's from some other place that's maybe more developed or something. But it's hard for me to believe that this was just a sketch, like a theory sketch from someone who's like, this is what might happen. And they draw a picture of a destroyed city. That's kind of hard for me to believe. I could see that this has happened, but I don't know where.
What if?
I don't know who.
Hang on. Thoughts are coming to me as I say this. What if it's from off world? What if this is something that one of Autonomy's people has brought because, like, they've had wars on Taldane or wherever Autonomy is from, and so someone sparked this idea with this picture saying, well, you know, back on our world, we've done this to cities that have tried to mess with us. And then now Telson and all her people are like, oh, we can figure out how to build that. And like, that's how it's come about.
Or maybe they're even just threatening the set of, we will do this unless you do this for us, right?
Could be. I didn't even see off-world.
I think that's most likely as well. I agree. It's probably a picture of like Threnody or something like that. And
I miss Threnody.
I don't. Yeah.
I like the name Threnody.
I want a full-length novel on Threnody. That'd be cool.
I actually agree with you. I liked the setting, but didn't spend much time there.
Anything else? Telson walks in at the end of the episode, but I mean, she doesn't reveal too much.
She full on walks in at the end of the episode, and earlier, Wax has a conversation with her directly through the Trillium earring. And we definitely skirted on villain monologue territory of sit down and let me explain my plans to you, you know, kind of.
Nice Trillium phone call.
Apparently. Yeah.
I enjoyed this scene a lot, the Trillium FaceTime phone call thing, because I feel like this is important for Wax's character development, right, as we follow Wax in this story. He mentions, I think in maybe our previous episode, he mentions like this, I don't want to wear it, I don't want to see like Telson, or we're thinking of all the things that can go wrong. And if there's anything that I've learned from the Olympics going on, where I've watched various events such as judo, the most effective defense is a good offense. And it's easy to try and like settle into this like defensive groove of trying not to lose, but you have to try to win, and that's probably the best way to not lose. And so that was also a very ridiculous comparison I just made, but I was just on my mind and it went out. So there we are. but all that being said, I think it's really good that Wax is doing this. I think he's getting a lot of information. It's really fun as the reader, selfishly, I guess, not thinking about Wax's position. It's really fun to watch these conversations and everything unfold. So yeah, I'm glad he put in his earring to chat.
I also think it's kind of funny that Seiza didn't tell Wax what he would do before he gave it to him. He's just like, you should make a Trillium earring and see what it does. We'll just find out. I don't know. It's just an idea I had.
Seiza is very out of it in these books. It's like he's not all there.
Yeah, he mentions that he, like we talked about it before, he's like somewhat incapacitated or doesn't really have any foresight or something. But it does seem a lot worse than I feel like I initially got.
Right.
It feels like it was proposed as like, yeah, he's just a little bit off kilter, you know, or can't see super far. But he seems pretty neutralized. Like he's not really a player in the game almost.
And I guess we didn't really talk about this, but autonomy, I think it's actually Moonlight who gives us some insight on what autonomy is doing. Autonomy is here to basically take the world from Harmony because Autonomy is afraid of Scadrial and like the science that they've accomplished, which I think is a little odd as like a premise, but I guess I understand that Autonomy feels threatened by Harmony because Harmony's holding two shards. The whole art piece analogy that Moonlight goes on with Miracy, I thought was a good conversation of if you had one art piece that was of 16, how would you make yours the most valuable? And that's when they talk about Odium. Well, I would just destroy the other 15. And Moonlight's like, well, that's what Odium's doing. But if your autonomy, then what did she say autonomy's doing?
Well, I'm not remembering all the details, but I think she gets into this kind of weird version of control. Autonomy wants control, but also wants autonomy. Like autonomy wants to have these avatars of itself everywhere. So,
if there's a
threat to my control, I'm going to take you down so that I'm in charge and not you.
Right. Yeah. The way Moonlight described it was autonomy is trying to like inflate the market so that the rest of them aren't like control the market. So the rest of them aren't as valuable. So make a bunch of copies of yourself so that you can be flexible with whatever comes. So yeah, interesting. I also thought Maracy's solution was kind of funny, that Maracy, in answer to Moonlight's question of how would you make yours the most valuable, Maracy says, well, I would hide mine and make it the most like mysterious. Therefore, it's the most valuable, which is exactly what Brandon is doing. He has shown us 15 shards and has kept one secret. So we all assume that that last one's like, oh, super important and it's going to be really cool, like game changer. Like, I just thought that was funny that he threw that in there because that's what Brandon's doing. Anything else, gentlemen?
Just one final note. I've been keeping an eye on our broadsheets, our newspaper clippings throughout the book. No major findings. I'm sure there is stuff in them, and I'm just not seeing them. There's a lot of text. But I did have one like minor wondering. In the broadsheet that's in my copy right before chapter 28, there's a letter to the editor from a Professor Olin Tober. And the entire letter is a complaint that SUNY Industries and their SUNY pup is inaccurate. And that here's all the reasons why you should stop advertising these SUNY pups because they are grossly inaccurate to what do they call it? Like the companion to the Ascendant Warrior truly was. And I kind of wondered, I was like, Tensoon, is that you? Like writing in under a fake name to say, hey, this thing is goofy and silly. I was way cooler than that. Get it right.
That's a great point. I had not thought of that, but you're so right. He's like, yeah, the integrity, the oomph of my impact in Era 1 has been cartoonized, you know?
And even the last little like punchline of it is like, you've depicted this as a little pup when in reality, the companion was a wolf dog, and the wolf dog is like in all caps. It's like, I was cool, dang it.
That's hilarious.
It's either in that broadsheet or the next one in the next episode, but I'll go ahead and spoil it for anyone reading along with us because it's not that important. But there's an ad for a fast food restaurant cook where they want a speed bubble, like fast food prep, where you get the order, throw up a speed bubble, make the food, and then pull it down and you get instant like restaurant prep, which I think is so funny. Like, whatever, I don't know if it's Brandon or his team or his alpha readers or whoever is coming up with like these crazy applications of his crazy magic system. I think these are so funny that who would think that to use your speed bubble as a fast food meal prep? Just my hat's it off is. To you.
It's hilarious. I absolutely love that. There's that. There's the like the soothing bar or whatever it is. Like you go soothing therapy or whatever.
Yeah.
You just go to get, you know, comforted. It's really fun. That's my favorite thing that Brandon does with these books is how he incorporates all the magic so cleverly throughout the world. You know, it's just a little nod. It's just a little thing, but it's really neat to see because it gets me thinking of all the possibilities, which obviously we could talk about for hours.
Right. Another one that stood out to me was coin shot insurance for your car and for your house. If like your gutter gets pushed off from a coin shot, you get coin shot insurance. Anyway, do you guys want to do Stormlight review or should we close it there?
Well, I'm always ready for Stormlight review. Always ready to remember how little I remember about this.
Oh dear. Yeah. Sign me up, I guess.
Okay. For a little bit of recap, I believe we're 11 to 8. Somebody correct me if that's incorrect, but I think it's 11 to 8 in Elliot's favor. Paul, you're going to lead this. I'm going to give you a chapter name of a Stormlight chapter. Give me a brief summary of what happened in said chapter. Your chapter name is Stormwall.
Kaladin. Kaladin goes, this is when I think at the end of Words of Radiance, when the storm is rolling in and him and Shallan are trying to race back to safety, and they just see the looming storm wall coming in.
Incorrect.
This is a tough one. There's a lot of storms in the Stormlight archive.
Yes.
This is either the time where Kaladin throws up the Windspren bubble and protects a bunch of people from the storm.
I just read that in my reread.
I don't think it is that, though. That's not my guess. My guess is actually way later, like end of Oathbringer, when they're setting up for battle around Thalen City and the Everstorm is coming in.
Incorrect. This is one of your first high storms in the book when Kaladin is strung up and he's talking to his men.
Remember when I just said Kaladin? I should have left it at that.
True. All right, Elliot, here's your quote ID. Who is speaking? If you lose your mind as you age, pray to the Almighty. There are people like myself willing to give you a good death. People who care enough not to snicker, but instead hold the sword for you as you fall on it.
I want to go by the cynicism in that quote and say that this is Moash.
Incorrect.
Okay. I think this is Mr. Sadius. I think this is Toral Sadius.
Correct. Nice job, Paul. Who's he talking to?
I think he's talking to Dalinar. Isn't he talking to Dalinar because Dalinar is throwing up his great schemes on how to save the world or unite people, and Toral Sadius is like being his snide self and saying, I'm not going to hurt you, but you're going to be hurting yourself, but I'll hold the sword when you fall on it. Or, I don't know, whatever he's saying.
The topic is correct. He's justifying his actions afterwards. He's talking to Adolin, kind of taunting him of what I did to you last book was justified because your father is losing his mind.
Okay.
All right. 1-0 to Paul. Paul, your review. I'm going to read you a review of probably a Stormlight book, but not necessarily. Could be a Cosmere book you have read. Tell me what they rated it and what book it's about. Oh, Brandon, where is your editor? Is their span read broken? Have they lost their wit? With a capital W. Why is this book crammed with so much unneeded detail? It's a slog to get through. The plot covered in a thick layer of creme.
I'm going to say that this is Rhythm of War. And the rating is actually the hard one for me. It really was a roast. He was like, where's your editor? This is long and unnecessary. Plus, where's your wit? Plus ratio? Like, this is pretty brutal. I'm going to go with one that I think is unbelievable. But I'm going to say that this is Rhythm of War. In that it is a... I'm torn between 1 or 2 stars. I'm going to go with the illogical one. I'm going to say this is 1 star out of 5 for Rhythm of War.
All right, Elliot?
I think this person is just being sassy to be fun about it. Because they clearly read the book. Because they snuck in all the references. So they didn't give up on the book. I don't think. They read it all. I think this is Way of Kings, and it's an I secretly like this, but wanted to trash it for a fun review, 3 out of 5.
This is a 3 out of 5.
Yes.
For Rhythm of War.
Oh.
So a point apiece for you gentlemen. 2-1. Elliot, I'm sorry about this. The trivia goes to you first.
No.
I couldn't resist. Sorry.
You can't even read his question with a straight face. This is not good.
Yeah, this is tough. Send help.
On the Vorin calendar, what year is Adolin born?
What year is Adolin born?
You can actually figure this out if you do a little bit of math.
I'm going to ramble for a second. I actually was doing some research and came across a Reddit post from somebody. It's probably someone who listens to random Cosmere podcasts like ours too, who built a spreadsheet. I love spreadsheets too. Rockets and spreadsheets. That's my thing. And they had mapped out all of the major known events in, I don't know if it was just Stormlight or if it was Cosmere, with dates associated with each. So you could like read through and get a quick like overview of when everything had, like when everyone was born, when all the desolations happened, all this. It's fantastic. I need to go dig it up again. That would be a really good resource to have like going into Stormlight 5. So if you're the person that made that, like, comment in our YouTube or something so we can credit you, because that was really a great work. All that to say, Adolin's date was on there. I'm trying to remember, like, even just the formatting of the dates. Like, what even am I trying to give you as an answer on this? I don't know. Yeah. I think Rosharan dates are in, like, the thousands when it comes to years. So it's like, and by thousands, I mean, like, 1,000. They're in like the year 1,000 something. So 1,108 is the year Adolin was born.
Incorrect.
I really have a major advantage because I've now ruled out 1,108.
There you go.
And now I just have to decide between one and every other number besides 1,108.
You have a smaller number of infinity to choose from.
Yes, I do. I have one knocked off the list. And there's not even negative years in this, I don't think. So really, my odds are pretty good. I've had this number stuck in my head, which is probably from something totally unrelated. So I'm just going to say it because I have no idea. 1178. That's my year.
Okay. So I will say that you're incorrect, by the way. I will say that audio listeners probably have an advantage here because they get years read to them every chapter in epigraph form. So when death rattles are read, they read you the date. And all the dates are in 1173 or 1174, which is the year before Words of Radiance. Okay? So if you do a little bit of math, do you guys know how old Adolin is?
He's like 19 or 20 or something.
Yep, 24. So Shallan, Kaladin, and Renarin are all 19. Adolin is 4 or 5 years older than them, and he was born in 1150. So there is your quick math for that.
I'm very happy that I even got the 100th of the year correct, that I was even roughly in the ballpark. I'm fine with that.
But the point does go to Paul. We will reconvene next week at 11 to 9. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Well done.
The beginning of my major comeback. Let's go. See y'all next week.